Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. Our AccuWindow forecast tonight, about 165 degrees in the shade. I swear I saw a bird burst into flame shortly after took off a little while ago. The solar wind tonight is up a little, 412.1 kilometers per second, and the proton count is quietly back down to 2.4. If you have been looking at the night sky lately, you will have noticed three things. The aurora creeped its way as far south as Nebraska this week. The space station has the space shuttle attached to it, and it is very bright in the night sky. Stunning to watch it cross, brighter than Jupiter. And the Perseids, although they don't begin until the 11th of August, have been preceded by debris from Comet Swift-Tuttle. Some have seen as many as 20 meteors an hour. They are very fast, taking only about 1 second to cross the sky. I would hate to be in a can orbiting the Earth right now. Don't be surprised if your cell phone suddenly goes out. Tonight, we are live on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona, as well as on the BBS Radio Network and the Conscious Media Network. We're at 50,000 watts of X Squared Radio, bringing you the very leading edge of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Tune in and get squared. We are about to start another hour of X Squared Radio. Tonight is another escapade into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Our guest tonight, the author of Witness to Roswell. You won't want to miss this. Hang in there, less than 2 minutes away, if we can get Don Schmidt on the air. More than 3,000 low temperatures have been set for the United States this year. The sun is unexpectedly quiet, and what is usually dry and parched upper desert in the northwest is lush and green all over the hills and pastures. Have we turned the corner on global warming, or is this the calm before the storm? Is this the normal undulation of Earth's temperature, or are we about to see a cooling trend that might last for decades? Stay tuned and find out. Tonight we have scheduled Don Schmidt. He is the author of Witness to Roswell. We are trying right now to raise him. A little bit of difficulty. We'll try about every 10 minutes. Last week we had Bernard Haich on the program talking about the God theory from a physicist's point of view. Great stuff. If you're not a member of the X Squared Radio Archives, there are two ways to do this. One, you can go to bbsradio.com and you can sign up for the archives, which will give you access to dozens and dozens of other hosts, lots of great content. Or you can go to xsquaredradio.com and you can sign up for the yearly archives. Costs less than a cup of coffee per month to listen to more than 400 hours of archives with some of the world's best experts in many different areas. If you're planning your fall activities and you want to know what conferences to go to, the one coming up in Burlington, Wisconsin is one to keep in mind, October 30th through November 1st. It's called the Burlington UFO Vortex Conference. If you want to know how to be a part of that, go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the Burlington UFO link on the right-hand side, and that will get you in for tickets. Please tell them you heard about it here on X Squared Radio. You'll not only get a discount, but they'll treat you right. So tonight, we are scheduled to talk about one of the most incredible cold case files in history. This case is much more than a mystery. It has been the subject of more government cover stories than any other. It is at the heart of an entire genre of galactic speculation and adventure. I am speaking of none other than the Roswell UFO crash. The book is called Witness to Roswell. The authors are Tom Carey and Donald Schmidt. They came out with a first edition a few years back and just recently came out with a revised and expanded edition. This one has a foreword by Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, and an afterword by George Noory with Coast to Coast AM. You'll find it, well, you'll find it so fascinating that you better find someplace shady to sit down and read it, because you won't be able to put it down. It's like the greatest whodunit you ever saw, and the evidence is enough to keep even the most investigatory of you gripped for hours as you pour through it. We are still trying to get Don Schmidt on the phone. We're having some technical difficulties in doing that. As soon as we get him on the phone, we will be able to come to you with that interview. If you want to call in and be a part of tonight's program, you can call us toll-free, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And if you have the free nights and weekends on that cell phone of yours, or you can reach a cell phone tower on planet, off planet, we don't care, 530-776-5154. We're always ready and willing to take calls all hours here at X Squared Radio. We're live each Sunday evening from 5 to 8 p.m. Yes, this is a three-hour radio program. Currently in the Phoenix market, you are getting 2 hours, the 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock hours. You know what to do if you want the third hour. Give a call down at KFNX 1100 and tell them you want the third hour of X Squared Radio. Simple as that. Also, if you're interested in advertising during this time, you can call the offices at KFNX 1100, or you can call us at X Squared Radio, or you can email us at X Squared Radio, and we'll be more than happy to work with you on advertising. That in mind, we have a couple of companies to tell you about. One is Global Green Cars. They are getting ready to launch a new manufacturing facility in the East to make electric vehicles. These are all plug-in electric vehicles. If you want to know more, you can go to globalgreencars.com and just look it up. Good stuff. Lots of good stuff happening out there. Also, if you want to know more about 2012 and the harvest of the end times, or if you're interested in the creation and destiny of the earth, you want to know what to do, how to be prepared, both physically and maybe even spiritually, you can get a hold of all of this information with the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy. That's Ark as in Noah's Ark, A-R-K, arkofmillionsofyears.com. Simply go there and order the books. And in doing so, because you're listening to this program, you get the first two volumes in audio form in addition to the books free. You'll get those instantly as soon as you buy the book. They're a free download once you purchase the books. Also in tonight's news, the Chinese are pressing their yuan as a global currency, or at least the formation of a new global currency. Those of you that are keeping up with this and maybe even buying and selling currency know what I'm talking about, but the vast majority of us have no clue and would like to know what's going on. As you see, look at the world's currencies, you can see that the dollar is highly unstable right now, especially in foreign markets. We have four major currencies in the world right now. You have British sterling, you have the Chinese yuan, you have the euro, and you have the dollar. And you've also heard rumors of a new currency called an Amero, which is a consolidation of Canadian, U.S., and Mexican currencies and economies. Don't need to tell you what an upheaval that would be for the West. But then we would be down to basically three major currencies, and it wouldn't take long before those were consolidated into one. Many are calling it an advantage for the future, elimination of high exchange rates. Others see it as a setup for global taxation and maybe even a transfer of power from sovereign nations to one of a more global nature. Anybody wants to talk about that, you can give us a call toll-free, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet, off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us, 530-776-5154. Again, tonight's guest, Don Schmidt, author of Witness to Roswell, still trying to reach him for tonight's interview. And as soon as we get that on, we'll be ready to go with you. Those of you that are not familiar with X Squared Radio, we are primarily an internet radio broadcast. I've been on since 2005. Started as an exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, claimed to be where the past meets the future. We tried to do so in such a way that it's positive, non-confrontational. There are two subjects we don't do here. One is conspiracy theories, and the other is ghosts. There are other stations you can listen to for that stuff. Here, we prefer to talk about the science and even the metaphysics of the human condition and how it relates to the universe. It's a little bit different, but those millions that listen around the world like the format and like the guests that we bring on. Like I said, if you missed last week's program, that was Bernard Haich, author of The God Theory. Really interesting book on the existence of God and the activities and energies of God from a physicist point of view. Quite interesting. If you're interested in UFOs, we cover that quite a bit here on this program. We try to bring the most credible witnesses, the most credible evidence onto the program. We've had J. Brian Boldman on the program talking about angel hair, which is reportedly some kind of polymer that's left behind in the air when these ships take off. They generate such a plasma field that generates sort of a spider web kind of hair that's left on the ground. It doesn't last for very long. Some samples of that have been taken, have been analyzed, and is very compelling and award-winning evidence of the presence of UFOs. Also, if you are interested in actually seeing one for yourself and you don't have them flying around your house, there is a hot spot in the United States called Trout Lake, Washington. You've probably heard about it on this program. If you haven't heard about it before, and this is a first for you, I implore you, just about any weekend you wish, you can go up to Trout Lake, Washington. The website is called eceti.org, eceti.org. The man is James Gilliland. He runs basically an open ranch where people can come for very little money, rent an apartment for a day or a weekend or camp below Mount Adams in Washington State. And for some reason, unexplained and also very consistent, UFOs frequent this area. They show up in the daytime. They show up at night. They've been photographed thousands of times. And it's a pretty regular occurrence. So if you feel like you have a free weekend and you're tired of the Arizona heat and want to get up someplace where it's nice and cool and you can see the stars at night, try it out. I can almost guarantee you won't be disappointed. And many people have argued throughout the decades that UFOs don't exist, that there's just no compelling evidence. We've even had people come on this program who have been reported experts in UFOs basically discount every bit of UFO evidence, except theirs, of course, which we freely let them do because we want you to hear their side of the story. But the vast majority of people either believe that they exist, have seen them themselves, or they have some anxiety about it. And those three groups are out there, to be sure. I guess my question to you tonight, as we're still trying to reach Don Schmidt to have him on tonight, is, do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe in their existence? Have you seen one? And the greater question is, if there were something like global first contact, or the government were to finally come out and say, yes, everything you've heard is true, we've had have all this evidence, and they throw open the warehouse doors, and we get to see everything that they've had in storage since 1947. Do you think that that would be traumatic to the world? Do you think it would upset religions? Do you think the social structure of the earth and the human race would be upset? Just interesting questions that we would like to put you to. And we have our first caller. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
It's Ramon from New York.
Good evening, Ramon. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to back you up on saying that it is true. If you do want to see UFOs, you definitely go to Trout Lake.
That's right, Ramon. You recently went to Trout Lake your first time, didn't you?
Yeah, and that was actually my first time seeing something that, okay, that's definitely not a satellite or anything else you want to call it, swamp gas or whatever. The other thing, if you allow me, Dr. Agnew, I recently put a poll together on Facebook. I don't know if you had a chance to see it or not.
And
if you allow me, I would like to... It's been 3 days, and I would like to give off the readings of what people said of, is the government hiding... do you think that the government is hiding extraterrestrial existence, like the whereabouts about it?
All right. This is a poll that you put up on Facebook, right?
Yes.
So give us the particulars.
Okay. To start off with, just so you won't say, oh, well, probably most of his friends are believers, and only 10 of my friends actually participated in it. I have 141 votes, 78% say yes, they do believe the government is hiding something about extraterrestrial existence, 13.5% say no, and 8.5% say not sure.
Wow.
And this is out of 141, which I'm going to keep up, and then later on, hopefully we can get into the 10,000, because friends of friends vote, so.
Right. So, well, let me ask you a more forceful question. If you think the government is hiding something about UFOs,
mm-hmm.
just do you think the government is hiding it from the government?
I would have to say yes, only because of a YouTube video I saw recently, and I can't remember the gentleman's name. Don't quote me, somebody in Congress, somebody have to do with government, they were asked by a caller on CNN, and the caller said, please take this question very seriously. And he was talking about the Disclosure Project. And he said, well, I know nothing about this, and I haven't been told anything about this. So to him, it's non-existent. No one's ever talked about it to him. So I don't know if he was just covering himself up or he really doesn't know. And I would tend to lean with he really doesn't know.
Well, you know, I've had friends of mine. Stephen Bassett is one who asked me to, of course, write my congressman. And by the way, my congressman from the state of Kentucky, who is now retired, and I had lunch several times and I discussed this with him face to face. And the question was, is the congressman willing to go to the floor of Congress and say, we demand full disclosure of all that information that the government has on Roswell and other crashes like unto it. And it never failed, although I knew Van Hillary very well, and when he came into town, we made a point to have lunch or dinner. It always sounded funny when I sat down with him and said, Congressman, would you go back to Washington and ask this question? Because no matter how mainstream I tried to make it sound, no matter how scientifically legitimate, it always seemed, I don't know, just a little fringy, you know what I'm saying? I really couldn't bring myself to make a public case about it. And I really have a lot of respect for those that do that. But it is going to be a challenge on several levels to get the government, the real government, to disclose to the government, yes, we've had all this all along, and we're sorry that we kept it from you, but we didn't think you were grown up enough to handle it. What do you think about that?
I all I could do is just laugh at it. It's so funny when people say there's actually no evidence. There was I don't know if I mentioned this on your show before, but there was a late night host, and he had a physicist on, and I don't want to mention any names, but he had a physicist on, and he asked him a very serious question: is there life out there? Is it life visiting us? And he said, no, there isn't. I haven't seen any evidence. And he started mentioning, Roswell and a bunch of other stuff. And he says, the only people who see, this is coming from a PhD physicist, the only people who see these kind of things are hicks in their pickup trucks with a keg in the back.
Oh, come on.
Does that sound like something a scientist would say? Like, really? Where did you study at? Like,
well, I used to go stargazing with my friends at the Catawba Valley Astronomy Club. If you want to know more, go to catawbasky.org. Great astronomers, very bright guys, got a great observatory there in Maiden, North Carolina. In fact, North Carolina has the clearest skies on the East Coast, so a great place for observatories. But I've been out with them on several what we call dark sky events. And they openly say, we don't want to hear anything about UFOs. Now, if you see anything fly over, it is a satellite. Do you understand? Well, yeah, I do. But, gee, I didn't know satellites could make a left-hand turn up there.
Okay, I was really bright.
Yeah, I was on, I went out stargazing two nights ago and was up at a fire station here in the Trinity Mountains, which is just gorgeous here in Idaho. I had to get some relief from the heat. It was 107 degrees down in the valley. Anyway, went up there, and besides seeing a few shooting stars and seeing the space station come over a couple times, I got out the night vision goggles and was looking up there, and there are some faint satellites up there. But the interesting thing is, traversing the sky were two, one right behind the other. And I mean, it looked like it couldn't have been more than a half a mile behind it. And as they were traveling along, normally satellites kind of travel in a straight line. The front one kept going, and the back one stopped. And I kept my eye on the back one for a long time, probably 15 minutes with the night vision. And it would pulse like a bright light about every 15 or 20 seconds without moving. Now, that was really remarkable to watch. We have some pretty strange satellites up there.
Yeah, don't we? Especially the ones at ESETI. I gotta say, those satellites are amazing. They make left turns and head towards the mountain. Yeah, it's the truth is, like I said before, and I'm sure other people on the show heard me say, if you really don't want to look at the evidence and you want to stay in your ignorance bliss that we're the only ones here, or that there's no evidence, then there isn't. Because no matter what I put in front of you, you're going to say it's not good enough.
Well, I was talking to someone the other day, and I asked them, have you ever seen the International Space Station? And they said, no, I haven't. And as the reason I asked the question is, we were standing outside, and I knew what time it was going to come over. I said, Well, would you mind standing right over here for about 2-3 minutes? Because right over there in the northwest, you're going to see it approach. And sure enough, it came over, and it had the space shuttle Endeavour attached to it. So it was huge, and just it was brighter than Jupiter. And I thought the guy was going to urinate himself. I really did. He said, "Holy cow, look at that thing. That's amazing." I said, "Look, it comes over about every 2 hours, okay? Every so often it passes over the U.S. Probably 6 or 7 days in a row, every 2 hours. You can even see it during daylight." And he said, "How come I've never seen it?" I said, "Because you never look up." So if people would just go out at night, get a lawn chair, lean back, get yourself a cold one, some binoculars or some night vision goggles, lay back, and just watch the sky. They're up there.
Yeah, I actually do that here in New York, and it's, like I said before, you can count the stars here. But I know what stars are out there in New York and bright, and I've seen satellites pass over, and I haven't seen the space station from here. But I remember being in Santa Cruz and looking at satellites and telling people that were from Santa Cruz, grew up in Santa Cruz, saying, "That's a satellite right there." Like, "I've never seen that." I said, "You've been here all your life and you've never looked up and looked at the satellite?" "No. Wow, that's amazing." And here comes this guy from New York who has no stars and points it out to you.
Well,
I'm going to let you...
The reason I bring it up, Ramon, is because I could just see that guy on some talk show somewhere with as posing as some physicist to say, you know, nothing bright goes over the sky at night. Excuse me? Have you ever looked up? No, because my office is in the basement at some university. I never look up. And the other thing that I know is that a lot of times they say stuff like this as a challenge to come out and prove them wrong. I mean, if I find myself doing it, you know, myself, I will discount something without knowing what I'm talking about just to make the other person come out, "Okay, what about this evidence?" I really want you to make your case, and I'm hoping that this physicist that you saw, unnamed as he might be, is doing the same thing. He's just challenging us to make our case. He's not really sure we're alone in the universe.
Yeah. I was going to say, because neither one of us had a pickup truck, and you were hiding the keg for me, so...
Yes, Ramon, we hid the keg from you. I do have a pickup truck, though.
Oh, you do? Okay, so you're halfway there, then.
I know, that's true. It is hydrogen-powered, but I do have one. And my other pickup truck's all electric, both of them.
Oh, cool. So I'm going to get off and let other callers, and hopefully I'll give you guys a call later when your guest comes on. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. It's a great book. We're still having difficulty reaching him, but we'll stay after him. Don't give up on us yet. Thanks, Ramon.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.
Talk to you later. All right, folks, if you're just tuning in, you're getting ready to break down in Phoenix. The phone number is 888-228-4494. Also, anywhere where you have cell phone coverage, 530-776-5154. And we'll take a short, 3-minute break while we let our affiliates answer, and then we'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. We're so glad you internet listeners are out there. While they're listening to commercials on the AM side, you're listening to beautiful music and considering whether we're alone in the universe. Wouldn't it be a dreary thing if we were? Maybe we'll call up James Gilliland and see what he thinks about whether we're alone in the universe. See if the studio can get after that. See if we can pull James on the phone for a few minutes. Do you really think we're the only ones with the technology to put a can in space? Program has already found 300 planets within flying distance of Earth. One might be like us. We'll find out. Are you awake enough to handle it? Are you confident enough in your humanity that you can stand a little company in the galaxy? Glad you're here with us tonight. X Squared Radio coming to you live from Western Idaho. Our AccuWinda forecast, gee, the temperature's dropping. It's down to about 142 degrees outside. I think the birds have stopped panting. That's a good sign. X Squared Radio is designed to bring you the leading edge conversations on the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. And we'll be back with more in about 40 seconds. Welcome back to Hour 2, the second half of Hour 1, X Squared Radio, coming to you live from Western Idaho. We're glad you're tuning in to Get Squared. Our guest tonight was to be Don Schmidt, author of co-author of Witness to Roswell. We were really looking forward to that interview. We're still trying to get him on the phone. In the meantime, we'll try to bring some other experts on. If you want to be part of the program, toll free 888-228-4494. If you're driving around in the heat of Phoenix evening, you can give us a call 530-776-5154. We're coming to you live on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, 50,000 watts strong, seventh largest AM market in the country. On this program, we discuss the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, where the past meets the future, right here. And we tell the whole story. We're on for 3 hours every night. If you're only getting 2 hours, get a hold of your affiliate. Let him know that you want the third hour of X Squared Radio, and we'll fix you right up. Those of you listening on the internet, worldwide. You can reach us just by calling in. Tonight's discussion, UFOs, are they real? Have you seen one? And do you think we're headed for global first contact? One thing is for sure, as our solar system drifts through the galaxy at 18.5 miles per second around our sun, and our heliosphere is blazing around as the galaxy revolves, we are nearing a familiar neighborhood, one that we have not been in ostensibly for 26,000 years. As we near this familiar neighborhood, the energies that are present in space, that is to say the frequencies, the resonance, the tones, the stimulants that are available in space, are having an effect on our consciousness. They're having an effect on the functioning of our DNA. One of the things that we realize when we look at the human DNA is that we're surprised to see so few gene pairs. We are expecting to see more than 100,000. We saw far less than that, ostensibly far too little to make up for the number of proteins that make up the human body. And what we learned is that the human body, or at least the DNA, or at least the cells, have a choice of proteins that they can make. And that means that there has to be an environmental influence upon that ability. So the interesting thing is that our consciousness seems to make up part of that environment. And that means that it's not just the peas and carrots that you consume, not just whether you live in a cold or hot environment, or whether you live in a stressful environment, or whether you have a life full of pleasure and opportunity, or one full of strife and challenge, or whether you're handicapped, or what language you speak, but more to the consciousness of the being. That is to say, the program that runs in the cell, or should I say runs on the cell, because it's now been found that the cell wall actually contains the program that runs. The nucleus is not the brain of the cell, and you are not bound to your DNA. That is to say, you can shape yourself, you can design yourself just the way you want to be, and you do over and over again. We know that every 7 years or so, just about every single cell in the body, with the exception of your brain and your teeth, is changed out, brand new, been recycled. That means every 7 years you are made up of almost completely new molecular material. And that new molecular material comes from the things that you eat, which comes from the earth, which is exposed to these frequencies in space. And so your environment, both on a molecular level, on a biochemical level, and a consciousness level, is changing. That change is making itself evident. Our awareness is changing. Our sensitivities are changing. And maybe, just maybe, we'll be able to turn this ship away from the waterfall it seems we've been headed for the last 50 years since World War II. When we discuss tonight's subject, which is that of ETs, UFOs, their presence, their purpose here on Earth,
the person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after the beep.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Well, bear with us. We'll have Dr. Agnew up shortly. We do apologize. We not quite sure what happened, but we're on top of it. So stick around.
Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to... And welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. Sometimes we have technical difficulties in internet radio, but we live with them, and a lot of experience out here for about 4 years, and you see just about all of it. Tonight's discussion is on UFOs, their presence, the meaning in your life, whether or not you are ready for global first contact. Our guest tonight was to be Don Schmidt, author of Witness to Roswell. We'll try to reach him for our next hour and see if we can have him come on the program. Occasionally this does happen, especially when we're talking with investigative reporters, because sometimes something comes up, something really amazing that the world needs to hear. And rather than talk about what you have already seen, they go out and see new stuff, which is fine with us. We cope with it. It means that you and I can talk. It's 5:47 Pacific time, down to about 125 degrees in western Idaho. Our call-in number is toll-free 888-228-4494. Toll-free in Canada. Oh, I'm sorry. If you want to reach us by cell phone, anywhere on planet, off planet, you can reach us 530-776-5154. Some great things happening in the world of energy today. A lot of companies, 10 companies so far, have announced that they're coming out with new electric cars. The race now is to see who can go into full manufacturing first. Our money is on Global Green Cars. If you want to know more, go to globalgreencars.com. Or go to xsquaredradio.com and click on the link to Global Green Cars. These are totally plug-in electric cars, about 125-mile range. Most people don't drive that far in a day commuting to and from work. But the nice thing is you don't have to buy any more gasoline. We use them around the plant and between all the odd jobs and things we have to do. We don't start up the diesel truck sometimes 4 or 5 weeks at a time. Saves a lot of money in fuel. So let's go ahead and talk about that. What does it mean that we're no longer alone in the universe? Some people have said, yeah, okay, we're not alone in the universe, but it really doesn't affect my job because I work at, you know, shoe stores or I work at a gas station. How does it affect my life? I venture to say that you barely go through a day without some technology that has come to you by way of the space program in one way or another, either the digital watch that you wear, the calculator that you use, the fibers that are in your clothes, the microcircuitry that's in your vehicle. All of those things have been driven by research that has been traded away for funding or through technology transfer because of the space program. And a lot of people would say at this time, we probably don't need to go to the moon. Let's not set our sights on 2020 to go to the moon. Who wants to go to the moon? What's the big deal? Some people say that's what happened back in the 70s. We had 3 spacecraft ready to go, already built, sitting on the launch pad, and they sat there and rotted because we knew that the public's view of the space program was getting kind of blasé. Why are we going back, collecting more rocks, making more experiments? We're not doing anything functional up there. We have all this going on with Vietnam and blah, 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 and why should we spend all our money up there? However, it was globally accepted that the nation that controlled the moon would control the world. For those of you that weren't around at that time, there was a race going on. The Russians and the Americans were racing to the moon. The Americans made it there over and over and over again, and the Russians were struggling to keep up. At the same time, we were adding pressure with our space program for military means, and it was an economic race that we happened to win. But for some strange reason, all countries, the U.S., Russia, and Europe, decided to end their space programs all at the same time. And we haven't been back since. So we're talking about 40 years since we landed on the moon. And now the president has announced he wants to go back to the moon. You know that in October there is a program called LCROSS. The LCROSS probe is orbiting the moon as we speak. In October, it's going to line up with its target, and it's going to launch a 2-ton projectile at the moon at about 5,600 miles an hour. Without an atmosphere, that's going to hit full force, and the design is to create a deep crater 5 miles across. The design is to blow enough debris up into the atmosphere, if there is one, of the moon, so that we can spectrographically analyze it and see if there's water, H3, minerals, other things like that beneath the surface. Ladies and gentlemen, we have much more advanced methods for gathering samples than that. We have robotic probes that we can drive around on the moon taking samples real time without actually having to attack another planet. I know that sounds a little strong, but anytime you launch a 2-ton projectile at 5,600 miles an hour at another planet when you don't have to, one has to wonder what the motivation might be. Why are we creating a new crater on the moon, and why is it in a location that we cannot see from Earth? Yes, these are questions that just don't get asked by the civilian community, but we ask them here on X Squared Radio, and we want you to help us answer them. Toll free, 888-228-4494. And if you're near a cell phone tower, which I suspect you are if you're in the Phoenix market, or the LA market, or the New York market, you can reach a cell phone tower by dialing 530-776-5154, and let's talk about it. What is the LCROSS mission all about anyway? It's probably not as cheap to blow the crater in the moon as it is to land a couple of low-cost robotic probes. We've been quite successful with the ones on Mars. They've lasted years longer than we expected them to. And now we're getting some great nighttime space shots from the cameras on the rovers. They're just aiming them upward toward the sky after dark to see the stars from the perspective of Mars. How creative is that? Those guys, Jim Bell and his crew down there at Caltech, are being very creative with the extended life of their robots roving around on Mars. Opportunity and spirit. We could be doing the same thing on the moon, and it's only a weekend away, a mere 250,000 miles. Some of us drove that far last year. So as we enter our next hour, we will continue to try to get Don Schmidt, co-author of Witness to Roswell, on the phone. Those of you that are in the Phoenix market, you have 1 hour left, so if you want to burn the phones up, you can. This is X Squared Radio. My name is Brooks Agnew. We talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. We have the best guests on the planet on a regular basis on this program, and we discuss these things in depth. Scott from Daytona, you're on line three. You're on the program. I guess not. Well, we'll try him back. His dial tone kicked in. We have about 3 minutes left in this hour. We'll take a 6-minute break for the national news, CNN, and then we'll be back with more X Squared Radio. Let's see, is Scott there? Let's see. Nope, Scott's gone. Well, he'll try back, I'm sure. As we consider 68 NASA missions active, some have passed outside the heliosphere. heading for distant places in the galaxy, and are still responding to radio signals, still bouncing back information. Some of those programs you don't even know about. Maybe one night we'll just list all 68 of them. If you want to find out more about that, you can definitely go to spacenews.com. And if you want to find out when the space shuttle is going to come over your house next, daytime or nighttime, you can see it now. All you have to do is go to heavens-above. That's heavens-above.com. It's free. Sign up for an account, put in your location, city and state, and it will tell you when it's going to come over next. It's a great time if you're having a barbecue in the background, in the backyard. Just turn to your friends and say, gee, you know, the space station's coming over in about 2 minutes. Why don't you look up? And there it comes. It is really breathtaking to see. Of course, while you're doing it, you'll be able to see a satellite every 4 or 5 minutes up until about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. Once the sun goes down past the limb, it gets a little more difficult to see. You'll need some night vision goggles to see them. And night vision goggles can be had. They're kind of expensive. I recommend if you're a beginner, go ahead and get a night vision scope. It's about a third the price. And you can really have some exciting times with it. It's a lot of fun. We will take a short break. This song that we'll play during the break is called Ancient Cities. And it was actually sung by the Portland Philharmonic Girls Choir. We'll ask Scott to hang on just a little bit. have Scott hang on for about 5 minutes, and we'll be right back after this break. Do not go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio after this.
Oh,
X Squared Radio, coming to you live. Yes, thank you very much. Portland Philharmonic Girls Choir singing Ancient Cities, a song about the disappearance of Atlanta. Okay, Scott, in Daytona, you're on the air.
Yes, one question, Dr. Agnew, about the L-Cross mission. The thought of an explosion on the moon takes me back to a science fiction show that was on in the 70s called Space 1999, where the moon accidentally does blast out of orbit as a result of nuclear waste being stored on the moon. I know this is the stuff of which drama and science fiction are made, but is it possible that the L-Cross mission could affect the orbit of the moon somewhat and cause cataclysmic results on the Earth?
You know, you're not the first person to bring that question up. One of the things that I marvel at back in, right after they put the geological sounding devices, the geophones, on the moon, the astronauts had been trained in geology before they went up there. They launched the Eagle, it took off, and when the fuel tank was expended, it weighed about, 350 pounds empty, it dropped back to the moon, and when it landed on the surface, they say the moon rang like a bell for an hour. Now, one would think, gee, the only way it could do that is if the moon was hollow. I remember in 1969, we were waiting for the astronauts to land on the moon. And I forget which night it was. It was a few nights before, a few nights after. They ran an old movie called Journey to the Center of the Moon. And if you ever get a chance to rent that, you should. It reports that the moon is hollow and that there's a civilization living on the inside of the moon. And many, including Alfred Lambermont Weber, have raised the question, if we're opting out of the robotic method for a ballistic method, do we have other motives for doing so? And will it have a long-lasting effect, not only on the orbit of the moon, but maybe the well-being of the moon? It's hard to know. But it's almost typical military thinking, like, oh, we don't expect to see anything happen from blowing up a hydrogen bomb. Sure, it might light up all the air on the Earth like a giant fireball, but we don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Is there something we can do to express our concerns? Like, do we need to write to NASA, or who do we need to let others know?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I will find out, and I'll have the answer for you by next Sunday. I'll find out
Thank
what
you.
We can do.
Appreciate
that's,
it.
That's a great question. Thanks for listening down there in Daytona. Are we coming through loud and clear?
Yes.
Excellent.
Have
We're
a good
glad
night.
Glad you're listening. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right, listeners, one of the things that we want to get across to you is that we really go into the depths of explaining why we're doing certain missions in space, why we're doing certain scientific missions. We're getting ready to get an updated report on CERN, what's going on there. We do know that the latest magnet has been fixed. It's ready to go back online. Are we ready to make the world's first antimatter or a whole bunch of tiny black holes? It's hard to know. Are we just going to discover how creation was done? Some of these things are a little bit out of our reach, but we are going to investigate them anyway. Don't go away, because we'll be back with more X Squared Radio in about 40 seconds. We're glad you're here tuning in to Get Squared. If you are watching the History Channel on the 21st at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, certain listings were different. You saw a show called That's Impossible. This week's episode was on weather warfare, a device called HAARP. H-A-A-R-P stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. I built an experiment and demonstrated it for the History Channel, and it aired. And I might say that I watched it myself just to see how the experiment came out, and it looked really, really great on camera. What we did is we built a cloud chamber. We built a miniature version of HARP inside the cloud chamber. We generated a cloud, let it get stable. Everything was nice and still. Cameras rolling. We put the HARP pulses into the chamber, and the clouds jumped out of the way. They didn't just go slowly. Like, in 3 seconds, the clouds were gone. We demonstrated this repeatedly for the History Channel and proved HARP can control the weather. And if it can, they are doing it. If you want to see it again, it's probably going to come up again. It's called That's Impossible. And if you want to go to historychannel.com, you can read about it. Tomorrow I will be in Burbank setting up the experiment again, and we will be filming it for another studio. So you have not seen the last of this experiment. It was so profound. It was so demonstrative of what this system in Alaska can do. Others want to see it. You don't realize what this system does. I'll give you a brief rundown. It is a phased array. Picture a giant field full of clotheslines, square clotheslines. That's what a phased array is. This is designed to put 1 billion watts of radio energy focused up at the ionosphere. And what it does, it heats the ionosphere, pushes it out into space like a giant parabolic mirror. They then bounce ELF waves, extremely low frequency waves. Some are ultra low frequency and very low frequency waves. It was thought originally that these would be used for communication with submarines, because this is how the classified binary signals are transmitted. But they learned that they could also put out extremely powerful low-frequency waves that have effects on things like weather. For one thing, as you push the ionosphere 80 kilometers out into space, the stratosphere has to move to fill in the void. When it does, it pulls the jet stream with it, which reroutes weather. With a little bit of skill, you can do things like steer a hurricane. Could be quite useful. Some are saying that they even used it and involved Katrina and steered it into that area on purpose just to see if it would work, or maybe they had another purpose in mind. In any case, the weapon system does exist, and it can be used for that. And if it can be used for that, that means they have to be treated in order to not use it. And sure enough, in 1996, Secretary of State Cohen signed a weather warfare treaty where they agreed not to use HARP as a weapons system related to weather. Of course, I'm sure we keep all the treaties that we sign, so we really don't have anything to worry about now, do we? If you would like to be on X Squared Radio, you can call in toll-free 888-228-4494. And if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us anywhere on planet or off planet, 530-776-5154. Again, tonight's guest was to be Don Schmidt with Witness to Roswell, but we have not seen him yet. We're still trying to reach him. There's still about half the program left. This is a three-hour program with BBS Radio. If you're not getting all 3 hours, make sure to get a hold of your affiliate, and they'll do the rest. Sometimes people ask questions like, why did they build the pyramids? Or some of the more profound questions, how did they build the pyramids? Well, rather than going to the how, which is kind of the interesting part about the question, why would we ask the question, how are the pyramids built? We're pretty sophisticated people. We can build just about anything we want. But given the time constraints and the size and logistics of pulling that much block material together in sandstone and granite, I want you to consider some of the logistical challenges alone. The red granite was quarried in Aswan, 300 miles to the north. The black granite was harvested in the Sahara, almost 1,000 miles to the south. The sandstone was quarried not too distant ways away on the other side of the Nile. Well, people have said, gee, that's easy. They just built barges. They put the blocks on the barges. They floated them downstream to the pyramid, and they built it. Well, there's one problem with that theory. It's upstream. And as far as we know, they didn't have a way to sail a 2.5-ton block aboard a reed boat upstream to the area of the pyramid and drop it off. There are a couple of pieces of evidence missing. For one, where's the 1.44 million boats that were built that they sailed upstream with this with these blocks aboard? Where are the trees or the reeds or the material they made the boats from? What did they do with the boats after they got them upstream to the pyramid? And where are the blocks that capsized off the boats onto the bottom of the river? Believe it or not, none of that evidence is there. And take something else into consideration. The alignment of the pyramid is precisely, and I mean within a few arc seconds, of being aligned with the star Sirius. It was critical to the design of that pyramid. It happens to coincide with the flooding of the Nile, a very critical event for life and times along the Nile in Egypt. It also has designed into it the curvature of the earth from corner to corner. It has designed into it the distance from the earth to the moon and from the earth to the sun. All of these things designed into it, and the kicker is it was designed in a very short amount of time. Now, I have a fax machine, I have email, I have a unified measuring system, either metric or SAE, and I can order something exactly 142 centimeters long, and I will get it exactly 142 centimeters long. But there was no such standard measurement system back then. And there was no ability to transfer precise measurement equipment information from the job site, that is of the pyramid, to the place where the blocks were quarried. Think about it. Would you send a runner with a mark drawn on his arm, make the blocks this long, or take a reed and run it down there and tell them to make the blocks as long as this reed? And then when the blocks returned back, guess what? They all fit. They didn't have any reject blocks. There was no reject block pile. When the blocks arrived, they fit in place. And if you've been there, you will notice you cannot fit a piece of paper between these blocks. I can't get bricklayers to lay a wall around my planter without being able to fit a piece of paper between them, let alone lay them without mortar on a sand base and have them stand up that long. So it isn't so much the how. The how is to stimulate our curiosity. The how is to get us to actually look at the building and say, gee, how did they build that? Because they know that if it was simple, we would just say, gee, isn't that nice? But if we can't figure it out, we look at it over and over and over again. We investigate it time after time. We send scores of engineers, scores of tourists, some of them whom are engineers, go there, look at them, run their hands over them, have their curiosities excited, and publish what they believe are their ideas. It is one of the focal points of tourism and wonder in the world, one of the seven wonders of the world, to be sure. In declaring it so, and in putting it in the forefront of our consciousness, and thinking about it, how it was built, we also begin to wonder, why was it built? Why was it aligned with the stars? Why was it made to last not 500 years, not 2,000 years, how about 4,000 years? Or 10,000 years until now? What would you think if I asked you the question, it was important for the pyramids to last until now? That now 3 years away from 2012 is an important date, an important time, an important era for that building to survive, so that we would have it here now. Now, the next progressive question is really going to tax your imagination. If that's the case, if they really did use most of the gross national product of an entire nation, in fact, several cities, and a huge logistical undertaking to precisely build our friends is that an energy resources that we left for ourselves. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, as soon as we get this on, we'll let you know. Should be coming in any second. Here we go. We're live. Okay. We'll get our studio to get Don Schmidt on the phone. He is at the number that you guys have. He can be on to the top of the hour. So one of those things happens. Sometimes you have a family emergency, and it's no problem. We adapt, overcome, and we'll have a great program for you. So we'll have our guest on in just a moment. You're listening to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho. All right. Don, are you there?
I am here, Brooks. Thanks for understanding your patients. Family emergency, such things happen.
Yep, not a problem at all. We always adapt. It's not a problem at all. I was telling the listeners earlier that we're returning to one of the most incredible cold case files in history.
As we saw
this case, This case is much more than a mystery. It has the subject of more government cover stories than any other, and it is at the heart of an entire genre of galactic speculation and adventure. This Roswell crash really has us going. So, let's see, it was about a year ago I had you and Thomas Carey on the program.
Yes, I do remember.
Since that time, you have made some new discoveries and have issued a new edition of the book Witness to Roswell. You've got a foreword by Edgar Mitchell. It's stunning. I wanted to get to all the details of the story, but I realize you can only be on a short time tonight.
We'll do it again, and I'll give you a full 3 hours, and no, nothing hopefully will interfere. This is about the first time this has ever happened, but nonetheless, as you were describing, and I'll actually even speak quickly if your audience will tolerate as far as going over some things at a faster pace. But as evidenced by anybody who is actually proactive in the field, you reach a point that you have to actually stop, sit down, and do the writing. And in the meantime, you're still all the more compelled to continue the investigation. Because, as been often said, Roswell is a race with the Undertaker. We have missed witnesses by a couple of years, by months, by weeks, by days. We even had one occasion where we called up the family as they were returning from the funeral. So you can imagine our frustration, because it's information that is gone forever. But nonetheless, even after the first Witness to Roswell book came out in 2007, it provided new leads, new information, new pieces of the puzzle, which we continued on, and we started to even come up with some new aspects about the rancher himself, Mac Brazel. And one of the chapters, we deal with the fact that he was not the owner of the ranch. Unlike all the neighbors who had personal stock, personal investment in their ranches, Mac Brazel did not. He was the foreman. And so it never dawned on us the fact that, well, he would have made every attempt, every effort to get to his boss. He had something that he couldn't explain. He had wreckage scattered all over this open pasture land, and it just then, you know, rang that bell that, what about J.B. Foster, the very person who owned the ranch? And they owned a much larger spread in western Texas at that time. So we started to track down the surviving members of that family. And what did they hear? And what did Foster himself say about the incident? And there you go again. They all talked about it being a flying saucer, and that's all Brazel called it. And that when Foster himself quickly rushed from Texas to the ranch, he himself was threatened by the military and warned never to say another word about this. So it's that same old story about how if you see what you shouldn't see, the military is going to come a-knocking. And it filled in, you know, that portion of the mystery, the fact that the very owner of the ranch was not telling a different story. He was repeating precisely what Brazel originally, you know, informed the authorities about, that there was a crash, there was debris that no one could identify, and there were bodies. And that's the dilemma that the military, the government, still faces, because what type of weather balloon has a pilot, has a crew?
Well, one of the things people ask me from time to time is, you know, how long was the debris on the ground before the military showed up?
And For days.
Yeah. And yeah, that's so always, I mean, you have a lot of souvenir hunters in that area. I mean,
absolutely. And we have
stuff.
A whole chapter on that. The fact that Brazel, you know, as a good boss, a good foreman, supervisor on the ranch, he still completed his chores for that week. And then he wouldn't even make the trek down to Roswell until Sunday, July 6th, his day off. Now, we believe from all accounts, all indications, that he first would discover the debris field the very early morning of Friday, July 4th. So it was all day on Friday the 4th, all day on Saturday the 5th, and all day on Sunday the 6th. The military doesn't start the cleanup until first thing Monday morning, July 7th. 3 full days that the souvenir hunters, and we've heard other examples of how there was a plane crash up in the Capitan Mountains, the southern ridge of the Rockies through that very region, and how everybody drove for 50 to more, even more miles to pick up pieces, souvenirs as you describe them. So this was nothing unusual, that when something strange on this order should have taken place, that it wasn't just a passing thing.
And yeah, so, and it also wasn't a weather balloon, because, you know, those they already were familiar with, you know.
Very common, very familiar. In fact, again, something that the critics, the skeptics, the debunkers never address, because they've never so much as even been to New Mexico, let alone spoke to a single witness. If you go to the ranch house, on that very ranch, there's an old water tank. It's about 15 feet in diameter, and it's just full of weather balloons gathered up through the decades, because one thing a responsible rancher does not do, leave such garbage, such wreckage out in open pasture, because cattle and sheep, like goats, are notorious for eating up everything in their path. I had some skeptic that said, well, that cattle, you know, they don't do such things. And I remember it as a child, I had an uncle who was a dairy farmer, and I remembered how it was rather unsettling when I would watch the vet come in once a month, and they would lower the magnets down into the stomach of the cattle and retrieve all types of tin and nails and other effects that just happened to be devoured, you know, by the poor animal. So I saw it firsthand. And so, again, a responsible rancher wouldn't allow that stuff to be out there for days unless, again, it was something that unusual. You remember how Brazo described that he couldn't even get the sheep to cross through that area, that he had a circle 2 miles around it, demonstrating how large an area the material covered, because it spooked the sheep. Something that Brazo's own granddaughter, Fawn Fritz, said this lasted for years, that they would even put the feed for the cattle and the sheep out in the middle of that very site, trying to lure them back into the pasture, and they were still spooked by it. Years later.
That's really amazing.
What type of balloon? And that's what it always comes back to, that they're insulting, you know, our intelligence, in still suggesting this was something so mundane, something that people were threatened over, something that children were threatened over. Military people were sworn to secrecy to their very deathbeds. And I defy anybody to come up with another example.
Along those lines, while our Phoenix listeners are listening to CNN News, you've investigated this for a long time with Thomas Carey.
20 years, yes. Yes.
What has been your scariest moment in doing your investigations on this story?
Oh, we had a number of we had one high-speed chase one time through the part of the desert, 3 o'clock in the morning. Still have no idea who it was. It was a couple suits and a late model car, and there shouldn't have been anyone out there. And for some reason, they were chasing us. We kind of laughed it off, because it was just like one of the times we were speaking to one of the witnesses, and 5 minutes into the conversation, somebody was playing back all the earlier, you know, commentary. And neither one of us was recording, so it was a third party. So it was very blatant, as though we just want to let you know we're watching, we're listening. We were leaving the Department of Archaeology at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque one time, and we were the only vehicle in the parking lot. And a vehicle comes racing up to us out of nowhere, and this middle-aged woman kept waving me over to the car. And I kept ignoring her, and she finally yelled, why won't you come over to the car? And I finally walked towards her, and I stopped, and I said, yes, can I help you? And she said, I just want to know, where did you buy your sport coat? And I just said, I'm not from around here. And I turned and started walking away, and she kept yelling, what's it going to take for you to come over to the car? And Tom finally said, we better get out of here before, you know, who knows who else is ducked down inside that car. But
yeah,
we laugh about it now, but as I often, you know, point out to people, I guess if they weren't paying attention, if they weren't coming out with alternative explanations, if the Pentagon wasn't having press conferences, if they weren't up to their fourth official explanation, if the likes of former Presidents Carter and Clinton weren't lamenting their frustration in getting answers regarding Roswell, and the late Senator Barry Goldwater and the late Congressman Stephen Schiff, and even the current governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, I feel we were going in the wrong direction. Obviously, we've gotten someone's attention in all this.
Well, you know, the politicians aren't the only ones that have been watching this. You mentioned in your book the late Peter Jennings hosted a much-hyped program on UFOs in 2005,
yes.
But he
right.
referred to the incident as a myth.
As a myth.
You know, my question is, does this mean that mainstream media accepts the military story, hook, line, and sinker?
Of course they do, and that's what's really sad in the sense that investigative journalism has truly become a lost art. I remember that very evening after that press conference where they came out with their fourth official explanation, the anthropomorphic wooden crash dummies. And even Jay Leno that evening on The Tonight Show, in his monologue, he just laughed and he went, how stupid do they think we are?
Yeah.
I mean, now they're talking about wooden dummies. And later on the program was NBC anchor Brian Williams. And Jay brought it up again. And I'll never forget how Brian Williams, very stoically and, you know, having to be the smartest person in the room, went on, what is it going to take for the American people to finally believe their government? They say it was a weather balloon, and that's good enough for me. Well, I'm sorry, the witnesses don't support your conclusion in all this. They're all, you know, they're all telling us it was the exact opposite. So since when does journalism ignore the very witnesses who were present? The Jennings, they shot 4 days with us. And you mentioned Edgar Mitchell, you know, MIT graduate, last man to walk on the moon. If that isn't enough to qualify you to some degree, we had offered him to be interviewed by Jennings. You know,
well, let's
Roswell.
Talk a little bit about qualifications. I mean, is this the same Peter Jennings who served as a war correspondent in Vietnam and exposed numerous military improprieties? Is this the same Peter Jennings who put his life at risk countless times on the front lines to bring us the truth? That Peter Jennings?
Well, Brooks, I'll tell you what happened. And we were tipped off by a former reporter from ABC, who still obviously has his close friends working at the network. They were told that there was a review copy of the two-hour primetime special released to the press, minus the half-hour Roswell segment. It went someplace else.
Wow.
Why did it go someplace else, and where did it go? And we know that somebody put the kibosh on it, because if you were to go back, if your audience were to go back and YouTube that very segment, it isn't ABC footage. It's all other network B-roll, because what they wound up, what they had to, now mind you again, they shot with us for 4 days. They didn't use a second of it. They had to rely on old B-roll to put that segment together within a week. And if you remember the very mannerism, the whole attitude of Jennings changes. The first hour was very positive, you know, very neutral, very objective. And then when it came to Roswell, as you mentioned, he refers to the incident as a myth five times in the very first, you know, first few minutes of the segment. So, again, I feel comfortable in the notion, just as with the crash dummy explanation, it was a victory. A victory in the sense that for the first time the government was acknowledging some semblance of bodies recovered. And we now believe that the fifth explanation is the myth. The idea now, whenever we deal with the skeptics, that's all they say. It's a myth. It is as though it never happened. It's all been concocted by a number of authors and investigators and the very witnesses themselves. But I hearken back to when we did the CBS 48 Hours segment, and it was one of the senior reporters, Phil Jones. We were walking outside the very hangar, P3, it's now Building 84, where all the wreckage and the ship and the bodies were stored before everything was shipped out. And he, you know, postulated the possibility. Is it possible that, you know, a number of these soldiers, these GIs back in 47, they sat in the PX one evening and over a few drinks, they concocted the whole thing, you know, thinking that someday they'd build a museum, they'd capitalize on it, you know, they'd make a big chunk of money off of it. And I said, well, rather silly that they waited till almost everybody was dead, or the ones who were still alive were all, you know, 80, 85 years old. It's hardly the time to all of a sudden think, now's my chance. I'm really going to make it big. he realized, yeah, it does sound pretty foolish, doesn't it?
Well, how do you get a whole town to go along with it? I mean, in your book, you talk about floorboards being ripped up and, you know, teams going house to house and going through fruit cellars and, you know, looking for every little scrap that was taken. You know, I'm reminded of a not too distant crash of the Space Shuttle Columbia. The news was telling people that picking up any debris would be considered a felony.
A felony, and correct? Yes.
That the area was being watched by high-powered space-based cameras that could see everything. They warned against souvenir hunting with dire consequences. And as far as I know, nobody went out there and scooped up pieces of that craft. But there was no such warning at Roswell. People went out and picked stuff.
Yeah, it's a perfect analogy. And certainly back in 47, there was nothing in the field manual how to deal with such an incident. Although we believe that the very people, the outside people who were brought in, were part of General Leslie Groves, who was the head of the Manhattan Project, and had his S1 unit, who were all highly trained, specially trained people, doctors and nurses and the like, in the event of an atomic accident. They had to be prepared that if anything should ever happen, that they'd be able to contain, retrieve, and then certainly cover up such an incident. And so that's the playbook we believe they relied on. So it was the same type of situation, minus an atomic accident. You just substitute a flying saucer crash. The concern also remains, how do you keep this, you know, out of the Soviet hands? Now, it's interesting, Brooks, that one of the new theories that is now circulating and is making the rounds on the Internet is that this was all part of an ingenious Cold War propaganda ploy on the part of the military, that they staged this entire incident to somehow convince the Soviets that we actually had in our possession a flying saucer, and that we were eventually going to reverse engineer it and then develop all of the new, you know, state-of-the-art, highly advanced technology. Well, the problem is, the military, I can't think of an incident where the military employs civilians.
Yeah.
Not only as part of such a scheme, but then to follow up and thank them for their cooperation, threaten to kill their children. And the point is...
Yeah, that sounds kind of right-handed and left-handed. And besides, you know, shortly thereafter, and I mean really shortly thereafter, some amazing technology came out. You know, it said that William Shockley at Bell Labs patented the transistor.
Yes.
The fact is that Shockley was working on rectifiers, and Bell Labs did not even have the capability of coating boron onto silicon at that time.
You're absolutely correct, yes.
Nearly everyone in the electrical engineering world believes it was as much a shock to Shockley that he had invented the transistor as it was to everyone else.
And then as we also, in one of the chapters in the new book, through the assistance of a colleague, Tony Anthony Bergaglia, we talk about how Wright-Patterson Air Force Base essentially assigned Battelle Institute down the road. I mean, Wright-Patt is in Dayton, Ohio, and Battelle Institute being over in Columbus, National Laboratory, which specialized in new technology research. And the assignment was to develop self-healing metal. And there are projects listed, and project number two in reference to this particular assignment is listed in the summer of 1948. Well, what about project number one? And what it amounts to is the combination of titanium and nickel forming the alloy nitinol, which essentially is memory material. The same type of material that our witnesses describe over and over again out at that debris field site at the base in Roswell, pulling pieces, you know, out of shirt pockets and demonstrating it to, you know, others around them, how you could crumble up this metal, and yet you couldn't cut it, you couldn't burn it, you could not put a scratch on it. And yet you could crease it, you could fold it, and then you'd place it down and it would smooth right out. Now, nitinol would be officially developed around 1960, but the projects originated shortly thereafter, Roswell. And again, your listeners could go to YouTube and just enter N-I-T-I-N-O-L, nitinol, and you'll see demonstrations of where they take a piece of metal and you dip it into hot water, and it becomes like rubber. It just becomes like liquid. And then a moment later, they dip it in the cold water, and it assumes its regular shape and rigidity. Now, that's what the witnesses at Roswell were describing, but it was right before your eyes. We haven't at least, you know, broken that part of the code, so to speak. But nonetheless, the project originated right after Roswell. And then you're mentioning as far as, you know, the microchip. We also can talk about fiber optics, which were described at Roswell. There are...
You know, my uncle was one of the first investors in fiber optics when they came out in the 60s. He said, this is going to be, you know, the communication network of the future. And I remember looking at the little fiber optic lamp that he had. This was in the 60s.
I remember, yeah, the 70s, yes.
It was really primitive, though. It was subject to cracking, and it wasn't ready for prime time yet. It was clear that, I think, I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was DuPont that developed it. I'm not sure.
It would officially be actually patented around 1970, yes.
Interesting stuff. So, when you're putting this together, and I'm looking at the book, I read the first book and I read this one. By the way, listeners, the book is Witness to Roswell, and the website is roswellinvestigator.com. And my guest, if you've tuned in late, is Don Schmidt, and he's a co-author with Tom Carey on this amazing book. If you buy it and read it, you will not be able to put it down. Just set aside a couple of days because you're going to be into it. And you're going to have post-it notes sticking out all over like I do. One of the things that I like about your approach is you, in your investigative reporting, is you put the witnesses' testimonies almost pretty much in chronological order so that you can see how the story unfolded citywide, countywide, even statewide, and how it affected people's lives. Some people's lives were really changed by this event, and
yes.
A weather balloon would not have done that. I mean,
no,
it wasn't just the military involvement. It was their seeing of something that was otherworldly. Can you describe that for a little bit?
Well, and you're also talking about a generation who had just, I mean, not only survived the Great Depression, but had just come off of the worst war in, you know, the world's history. And they had seen the unleashing of the, you know, the biggest weapon, the atomic bomb. And the irony of the fact that that very squadron, the 509th Composite Bomb Squadron, was headquartered at Roswell. So these are the people who are involved with this incident. These are the people who we are then led to believe couldn't recognize neoprene rubber, you know, the weather balloons, and then the radar reflector kites that were nothing more than reflective foil, wooden sticks, masking tape, and baling twine. The very balloons, which I described earlier, still being retrieved by all the ranchers north of that area and keeping them away from their livestock and just depositing them, you know, in garbage heaps or, you know, burying them or whatever else they do. So nothing that even a five-year-old child would have difficulty in recognizing. Now, when the Air Force officially investigated UFOs, you had Project Sign, Grudge, and then the most famous one being Blue Book, the critics would say, well, you know, many UFO sightings were explained as being nothing more than weather balloons. But that's when they were at 10,000 feet. That's when many of us, depending on the upper atmospheric pressure, the wind speed, we might see a balloon at that altitude, and yes, you know, reflecting the sun, it might look elliptoid, it might appear to zigzag and maneuver erratically and appear to be something extraordinary. The difference, though, at Roswell, it was on the ground right in front of them where they could see it, they could hold it in their hands, and then we're asked to believe that not only the heads of intelligence at Roswell, but the base commander and the sheriff and his deputies and all the other people involved, no one could recognize this until they had the press conference going up the chain of command in General Ramey's office in Fort Worth, Texas. And if it isn't enough for the public to hear that one of the two officers in those staged pictures, the late Brigadier General Thomas DeBose, who was General Ramey's chief of staff, before he died, he signed an affidavit describing how they substituted the balloon for the actual material. Well, isn't that good enough for anyone when they admit we switched it? A Brigadier General actually signs an affidavit. We're the ones who played the old switcheroo and it worked.
My
and
goodness.
Yet, again, we're asked to believe that these people, none of them are competent enough to know what they're talking about, yet a lone witness, a lone witness can testify as to witnessing someone perform a crime, and it's enough to put someone in prison for a lifetime. And here with Roswell, we have hundreds of people, hundreds of witnesses. And just by the very wealth of eyewitness testimony, we remain convinced we could take this into any court of law and win this hands down.
Well, one of the questions that people ask me from time to time, because now in this day we have literally hundreds of thousands of UFO sightings and encounters and burn marks in the ground and angel hair and all kinds of things like that, but what is it about Roswell that makes it so special, that keeps you two so focused for 20 years gathering this evidence to tell this story and force the government to finally, or maybe the government of the government, to reveal what they know about this crash? What is it about Roswell?
And it's a great question, because it's one of the reasons we refer to Roswell as the granddaddy of all UFO cases. Because, as you first described it, Brooks, it is the ultimate cold case file. It encompasses as far as just about every aspect of a true mystery that one could desire in a mystery. Unlike, you know, just about every other UFO case, you have an actual recovery of hard evidence, physical evidence. It isn't just a fleeting glimpse of something in the air or something that's landed and left some depressions on the ground. It isn't, as you mentioned, even angel hair, something that you can just take into a laboratory and hopefully determine whether it's prosaic or, you know, something unworldly. With Roswell, beyond the material, you also have a ship, and obviously most fantastic of all is the fact you have bodies. You have non-human bodies. And as one of the officers, you know, commenting to a reporter one time, said, "They sure weren't from Texas." Much to the credit of the witnesses, they always talk about the little men, the little people. They looked like children, but they weren't, because of the disproportionately larger heads and eyes. The fact that people were threatened over this, the fact that
there were reportedly four individuals, off-world individuals. Three of them had already passed away, but one of them was still alive, although injured. Do you think that they were able to revive this individual?
Well, it's one of the things we are, you know, interestingly enough, working on right now, in that we've tracked down the family of one of the very ambulance drivers who was immediately called out to the scene. And even his wife confirms how, right up to his death, he described how when they first arrived, one of the bodies was very crumbled. That was the word he used. It was all torn up. And another one was like a child lying in repose, very serene, very peaceful. And the other one was gasping for air. So we know, even based on the deathbed testimony of Lieutenant Colonel Black Mac Magruder, who was an ace from World War II, in what he described to his sons. He was part of the War College, and he was assigned to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in April of 1948. That's what he described to his sons, and that he had the opportunity then to see the survivor. So this is April of 48, so we have at least testimony up to that time that one survived. I can't account for anything beyond that. But Magruder described this to his four sons independently before he passed away. So we have firsthand testimony of the survivor. And again, to suggest that this was either a balloon or these were, as I just jokingly commented to a colleague in Mexico, I don't have any witnesses describing wooden crash dummies walking around.
Don, we have about 2 minutes, and then we're going to have to let you go back to what you were doing. And we are going to have you on again very shortly for the full 3 hours, because there's a lot of evidence here to go through.
Have there
been any high-up government officials that have tried to get this file opened and been unsuccessful?
Well, I had mentioned former Presidents Carter and Clinton. If you remember, Carter had even made it a campaign promise that he was going to declassify, release all the UFO files if they did not threaten national security. Well, are we to then, you know, is that to infer that it does, they do threaten national security? Because obviously nothing came from that. We know that Bill Clinton, you know, even, you know, publicly has discussed Roswell, has talked about the difficulty and the frustration on his part getting answers to the case. I often ask audiences, you know, college audiences, for example, are they aware that Roswell is even mentioned in Ken Starr's Monica Lewinsky report? And when the grand jury subpoenaed the book that Lewinsky had gifted President Clinton for Christmas one year, when they retrieved it from his private study, they found it sandwiched between a book on Winston Churchill and an autographed copy to the president of UFO Crash at Roswell, our first book. So he is no stranger. In fact, the president was handed a copy of the previous Witness to Roswell book just a little over a year
ago. That's amazing.
So we're in high company.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to turn up the flame because now we're live in the Phoenix market with KFNX 1100 and lots and lots of listeners out there, and we're going to have you back on. I'll let you get back to what you were doing. Thank you so much for coming on this 1 hour. You have just ignited my my curiosity all over again, and I'll get with you in the next week or so, and we'll schedule another time.
Please do, and I will give you a full 3 hours. You won't
Excellent.
Be disappointed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brooks, and thanks for understanding. Truly appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
All right. All right, bye-bye. All right, Earth Explorers, we're going to have to take a quick break for our CNN affiliates and listen to the news. And we'll be back after this with more X Squared Radio.
Make me a witness. Heaven.
And welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from western Idaho, and the temperature is down to about 115 degrees. Birds are no longer bursting into flame when they take off. Our last hour, we had Don Schmidt, co-author of Witness to Roswell, on absolutely startling stuff, amazing stuff. And we're going to have him on again and finish the whole 3 hours. He did have a family emergency come up. We totally understand that. We have him here all the time with X Squared Radio, and it's just one of those things that happens. We work around it. If you're wondering what to do with your fall schedule, wonder no more. You can get away from the heat this October. You can make your way up to Burlington, Wisconsin. October 30th through November 1st is the Burlington Vortex Conference. Jesse Marcel Jr. is going to be up there. We're going to hear a lot more details about Roswell. It is a UFO conference mecca. I'll be up there as well as others, and expect to see you there. And if you want to join, if you want to get a ticket to go there, it's not very expensive. One of the most budget-minded conferences in the country. You can click on the Vortex Conference link at xsquaredradio.com. It's on the right-hand side. Make sure to tell them we told you about it here at X Squared Radio. You'll get a discount, and they'll treat you very well. We have a lot of listeners out there tonight. Phone lines are going to pack up. We're going to open the lines this hour. We'll finish off talking about UFOs if you want to, but we're going to launch into Egypt. What it means now, why are people drawn there, what's going on, why are we so concerned with 2012? Don't go away, we'll be back with more X Squared Radio in 45 seconds. And here we go with hour three of X Squared Radio. If you're not getting all 3 hours, get with your affiliate. Tell them to get a hold of us here at X Squared Radio or at bbsradio.com. By the way, just in case you've had aspirations of being a talk show host yourself, there are openings. You might have what it takes. Get a hold of the folks down at bbsradio.com and see if you could make it as a talk radio host. It's not all that difficult. You just have to man about 46,000 knobs and keep your head about you while you're doing it. I'm just kidding. You'll have a lot of fun. Give it a try. If you're listening also through the Conscious Media Network, we are glad you're out there. Great addition to the rebroadcast. If you want to listen live, you have to listen between the hours of 5 and 8 p.m. Sunday evenings. We're only on one day a week. We try to put all the quality we can in one day. As you heard in the last hour, we have the best authorities in the world right here on X Squared Radio. Two things we don't talk about very often, in fact, almost never, conspiracy theories and ghosts. There are stations out there that talk about that, and you can tune into those. Here, we talk about the mysteries of the universe and the Earth, and we try to approach everything from a positive point of view. We're glad you're tuning in and getting squared. The pyramids. What is so amazing about the pyramids is the difference between construction styles. Now, if you listen to those on certain cable channels, or those on certain official Egyptian interpretations, they started out small, basically with mud blocks, stacking them one on top of another, learning as they go. Some are stepped, some are tilted, and finally worked their way up to the famous Giza Pyramid. Nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is that the Giza Pyramid was the first. And it was there a long time before the rest of the pyramids were there. And then the others started to get being built as copies. and we'll go into more detail as we go. Mark is on line one. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Agnew, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for joining us.
I have a book that I'd like to recommend for you. It's called Mass Contacts by Stefano Brecca. And I heard about this listening to Paula Harris one day. And one of the things that really struck me about this book is that on the cover, there is an actual picture of an 8 or 9 foot tall ET in a diver suit. So I thought you might want to hear a little bit about this book. It's pretty interesting.
Wow, that's interesting. Was it a recent work?
Yeah, I think it's just come out, and Dr. Michael Sala has also recommended it as well. And it's called Mass Contacts, and it's written by Stefano Brecchia, who's an engineer and an expert in computer graphics, artificial intelligence, and other things. It's a fascinating book, and it's mainly about some ongoing Italian contacts with two races of ETs, one called the Umites and the other called W56, and which is a strange name. I think the real name of the race is the Akri. And what's really interesting is there's a few pictures in the books of the actual very human-looking ETs. And the W56 are about generally 8 foot tall or so. But it's quite a fascinating book. I can rattle on a little bit here. You might find it a little bit interesting.
Well, why don't you just read the cover to me? Just read the back cover. I'm going to do my investigation. I'll get a copy of the book, and if I come to the same conclusion as you, we'll definitely have him on and interview him, because this is one of the subjects that we definitely investigate as deeply as we can here, especially if they have real photographs of real ETs. That's remarkable.
One of the they look very, very human. One of them, one of the pictures is about of a fellow that looks to be about, oh, it's hard to tell, maybe 8 foot tall. The W56 are said to be from like 20 different star systems in our galaxy, and they claim to have been on our planet since at least the 17th century. I don't know if they're still here or not. I don't think that they are, because I believe they had to leave. I think they're actually at war with another group of ETs, and some of their bases on the Earth were destroyed. They had a base under the Mediterranean Sea and a base somewhere underneath Italy, and this base was so large that it actually rains within the base. It's a pretty phenomenal book. You might want to get it and check it out sometime.
Yeah, I will. You know, there are portions of the Mediterranean Sea that are quite deep, especially toward the Rock of Gibraltar. It's said that that was once an inland valley, and what happened was during an earthquake, a vault opened up there in Gibraltar, and the rushing in of the Atlantic tore that open. And they're saying that about 50 times as much water as pours over Niagara poured into that valley and filled it up with water and buried cities that were there. So are you saying that this base was once on dry land, or they actually built it under the sea in the Mediterranean?
Actually under the sea in the Mediterranean. And they have bases, allegedly, all over the earth, and many of them are, in fact, underneath the sea. It's pretty interesting. They are supposed to breathe oxygen, just as we do. Their hair was typically very blonde and thick. Their eyes are kind of a grayish blue, and they tend to have a very calm attitude and are almost never seen to be angry. And they say that there are 15 billion people on a couple of their home worlds. The story is kind of convoluted a little bit. It kind of jumps around a little bit, but there are passages which are really, really fascinating. So I just thought I would recommend that book to you.
Okay, recommended. I wrote it down, definitely. What did you think about our guest tonight, Don Schmidt, with Witness to Roswell? Have you read that book?
Well, you know, I haven't read his book, but I read The Day After Roswell by Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso. And one of the things that always interested me about that book was his description of the creatures or the beings, the ETs that were in the craft. And one thing that I thought was very interesting is that they said that the ETs had a kind of inner skin that was completely permeable and that was part of their actual digestive system. I don't know if you'd ever heard about that or that you could comment on that. Or.
Wow. I've seen people do that to money. They get close to money and they just digest it. But I've never heard of people digesting things with their skin. That's that sounds kind of creepy. Makes you not want to shake hands with them.
The other thing that they the Day After also talked about, that the ETs wore a headband, and that it fit over their cranium just above their ears, and that they somehow used that to control the craft. Had you ever read anything about that?
No, I haven't. I interviewed Art Campbell a long time ago, and he—I think he was the author of a book called *Millennial Hospitality*. And he talked about the tall whites that lived in the mountains above Las Vegas. He was a weatherman out there, very remote area, and he would have to launch weather balloons. And he interacted with them for a couple of years, and they could actually. Put on clothes and a wig and almost pass for Nordics in town. They were a little pasty, but other than that, they pretty much looked like us.
Now, that was Charles Hall, correct?
Charles Hall, that's the name I was looking for. Art Campbell's the San Augustine crash investigator. You're right.
You know, there are so many cases and so much information out there, it's just kind of overwhelming sometimes. I think I've read like 15 books, and it's just incredible the amount of information that's out there. Have you ever interviewed Dr. Stephen Greer?
Yeah, I've interviewed him a couple of times and then spent some time in one of his workshops out in, Palm Springs. So we're pretty familiar with one another.
What did you think of his workshop?
I'm going to reserve comment on that. I don't make comments on other people's workshops on the air. But, you know, if you want to go take one, you can. I'm not going to recommend it or not recommend it.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. His material is very interesting, and I've kind of followed his work over the years. You know, there's another Roswell book that I don't know if you've read or not. It's called... it's written by Lawrence R. Spencer, and it's called The Alien Interview, and it's allegedly about the remaining ET that was alive, and there was supposedly an Army nurse who was able to communicate with the ET telepathically. Have you ever heard of that one?
I don't think I have, but I am familiar with the fact that ETs do communicate telepathically. Even items that I haven't read, I spoke to some folks that I know pretty closely up in Indiana, and they have had quite a few telepathic encounters with ETs on their farm, in their house, and even from their low-flying aircraft. To the point where the father and the youngest son have had the most interaction with them. And finally it got to the point where the father basically telepathically told them, you're not welcome here anymore, and they left and never came back. But there was some strong communication for about 4 years, 4.5 years in that region.
Doesn't James Gilliland communicate at times telepathically? With some of the beings that are out at his ranch, or did I misunderstand him?
No, you're absolutely correct about that. And I got to tell you, I'm a telepathic stone. I don't get too much from time to time. Although I sometimes get something and I have to interpret it later. But I can tell you, I've been up there with hundreds of people multiple times, and I never fail to see something in the sky, daylight or nighttime. I photograph things, I've seen things, and I've even felt things up there. So there is a possibility that in lieu of written language or spoken words that vibrate across the air to one ear or another, telepathy with pure thought, pure imagery, does happen, and it is quite effective at getting the message across.
Well, Dr. Ernie, it was always a pleasure talking to you, and I'll listen to the rest of the show, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm definitely going to look up that book, and we'll interview him.
All righty, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye. All right, one thing that never ceases to amaze us here at X Squared Radio is our audience just keeps growing and growing. I'm told from our producers that our audience is in record numbers tonight, and I know there are a number of you that have some great comments and questions out there. The phone lines are open, and I want to hear from you now. You are the expert for the next 40 minutes on X Squared Radio. Our call-in numbers toll-free, 888-228-4494, and if you can get to a cell phone tower, on planet, off planet, makes no difference to me, 530-776-5154. So pick up the phones right now, call in, we'll take as many calls as we can take in the next 40 minutes. Anything unusual that you've seen out there, that you've read in the news, there are communicative efforts going on with Facebook, MySpace, YouTube. Somebody out there has seen some amazing things. You got to get it off your chest. We got to get it on the air. So pick up the phone, toll free, 888-228-4494. And if you've got free nights and weekends on that cell phone, make use of it, 530-776-5154. You're welcome right here. We'll talk about just about anything you want to talk about. So, getting back to the Egyptian pyramids, it is a fact that the Giza pyramid was the first pyramid built. It was there for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years before the Egyptians ever got there. There was enough information there that when the pharaohs began to build their dynasties, when Egypt actually became Egypt, and became the heart and soul of the entire Muslim and Christian world, virtually all of the stories that you find in the Bible originated in Egypt. They originated there for a reason. And if you ever get a chance to go there and travel from pyramid to pyramid, you will see the difference between precision-cut sandstone, precision-cut 50-ton granite blocks lifted hundreds of feet precisely into place, and compare it to hand-padded mud bricks piled in a pile in the middle of the desert in such a way that hopefully they wouldn't fall down, you'll see a huge difference in technology. One is obviously a copy of the other. Of course, the status quo that they would like you to believe is they walked before they could run. In other words, they built the mud huts before they built the fabulous, flawless Giza pyramid, the Great Pyramid. Nothing could be further from the truth. I have proof. You get in a bus, you drive a caravan, you go out past Nag Hammadi, and you go to Dendera. Dendera was once a huge, glorious temple built by the Hathors. Torn down portions of it, rebuilt on top of crypts, and then expanded in later years. You look at the workmanship of the original building, and what you will see is precision and beauty and forethought and unbelievable workmanship, and technology after technology after technology carefully carved into the stone walls. And what you see outside the city, the expansion, the later construction, is nothing more than mud bricks. Not even close to the same glory. Now, one would have you believe that one preceded the other. But in Dendera, you can absolutely see which one came first. The more advanced, more skilled, more beautiful and aesthetic and powerful building was first. It is exactly the same in Giza. The Giza pyramid was first. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise until you go there yourself. Put your hands on the buildings yourself. And you'll ask yourself the question, just like an engineer would, how would I cut this stone and haul it 300 miles and put it in place right here in this spot? And the next question is, why would I align it the way that I've aligned it? Why is it so important to align the building so that when Sirius rises, which it will do before too long, and the Nile begins to flood exactly on that day, why is that important? Do I build an edifice like this just so I know when the Nile is going to flood? Sounds kind of primitive. These were not primitive people. These were very advanced people. And they built something so amazing, so beyond the engineering capabilities of what we think those people were capable of at that time, and probably beyond the engineering capabilities of us today, that it would cause us here in the 21st century, right before 2012, to look at it and ponder, how in the world did they build that thing? And why did they build it in such a way? And by the way, who is they? And when you start asking those three questions, something inside of you begins to turn on. Something inside of you begins to come alive, begins to wake up. We call it an awakening. And you realize, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that you, the real you inside, that person behind the face you see in the mirror each morning, have been around for a long, long time. Long before your last mortal birth here. And if you believe that, and believe me, every race on the planet, every religious tradition on the planet, including Christianity, before they expunged it from what we know now today as the Bible, believes that you have lived multiple lives. That's correct. Multiple lives from which you gain wisdom each time. You lose it because after you're born, your parents don't know how to bring that back alive in you, and by the time you figure out how to talk, it's repressed. But it's back there. And when you travel to these ancient places, sit and meditate in those places, listen to the music, look at the icons, walk through the jungles, run your hands over the stones, and listen to the sounds it took to put this together, it begins to come alive in you again. And the doubts are removed, and faith is replaced with knowledge. Let's stand upon the knowledge and reach a little bit further. Call in toll-free worldwide, 888-228-4494. And if you can't call toll-free from where you are, you don't want to use the U.S. country code, that's no problem. Grab that cell phone. Get to a cell phone tower. It's 530-776-5154. We will take calls from anywhere on planet or off planet right here at X Squared Radio. Our first 2 hours tonight, we have the live Phoenix market. The rest of you are listening worldwide on the internet, which is a fantastic media. And over the last 4 years, X Squared Radio has grown so much, we are now considered the largest talk radio program in North America because all of the listeners all around the world are coming here to this station to hear about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. And there's some amazing music out there that kind of brings this, lights it up inside of us. So while you're looking for that telephone, while you got your headphones on, listening live, or you have the speaker on and you're looking around for your phone, I'm going to play you a short piece of music. It's put out by a band called Adiemus, and I think you'll like it. Maybe it'll excite something inside you. Yeah. Some say this music was channeled from the inner earth. Close your eyes, listen for a couple minutes, and call in and tell me what you think. So tonight, after the program, after dark, go out and look up at the sky. To the south, you'll see Jupiter, bright, white, like a jewel. And if you have very little light pollution, you're liable to see meteorites left over from Comet Swift Tuttle. Some are reporting 20 meteors an hour and more across the sky. They're very fast, though. Only take about a second to cross the sky. We're glad you're here with us tonight at X Squared Radio. We have about 20 minutes left. Phone lines are open, toll-free worldwide, 888-228-4494. Anywhere else, on planet, off planet, if you've got free nights and weekends, go ahead and use that cell phone, 530-776-5154. As you awaken, and I don't mean wake up in the morning, I mean as you awaken and your inner sense of who you are, why you're here, where you're going, what the purpose of life is, begins to come alive for you. You might feel an urge to travel. And if you do, there are some very good opportunities out there. I can recommend two. Both links can be had at X Squared Radio by going to the archives. But I'll give them to you, and they're easy, very easy to Google. One is William Henry. He's always doing trips to Egypt, and I think if you're going to go to Egypt, you can't pick a better guide than William Henry. He is a Egyptian mythologist and can take you places and show you things you're not going to see by the government tour. And the other is Maureen St. Germain, one of the great Flower of Life meditation teachers. She also has some trips that she guides around the world to Tibet, the Upper Tibetan Plateau. It isn't all a vacation, people. It's definitely a learning experience. If you want to get up there and see Everest, and you want to see K2, and you want to get back to thousand-year-old monasteries and listen to chanting and put on the robes yourself of distant areas that have been keeping the world at peace for a long, long time. Those are two trips that you could take this fall. And don't forget about the Burlington, Wisconsin Vortex Conference, October 30th through November 1st. The link is at X Squared Radio. All you have to do is click on that. Make sure to tell them that we told you to call. And you'll get a discount, and they'll also treat you really well. You'll be in the VIP section of the camping ground. From time to time, we get the unexpected here at X Squared Radio. It isn't all scripted. We don't have a team of experts specially trained in every facet of radio broadcasting. My primary job during the day, you'd be amazed. All I do is build electric cars and biodiesel plants. As if that isn't enough, this is a once a week program for me. I'm not a broadcaster. I'm an engineer and a scientist. This is a hobby. You are part of it. And you have made it what it is today. We started in September of 2005, and now here we are approaching August of 2009, one of the largest talk radio programs in North America, certainly one of the largest on the Internet, and now we're branching out into AM. We're in KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, Arizona, adding markets all the time, and we're also rebroadcasting on the Conscious Media Network, and we appreciate that. We originate on the BBS Radio Network at bbsradio.com. If you think you have what it takes to be a talk radio host, always wanted to give it a try, it's not that expensive. You might find it's a little harder than what it looks, but you might find it interesting, and you might have what it takes to be great at it. Just go to the folks at bbsradio.com, and they'll set you up. They have openings during the day and during the night, once a week, every night, whatever you want to do. The main thing that, as we close out this program, that I want you to realize is we don't want you to have any fear about what's going on in the world. You are not a victim, and you are not a spectator. You are a participant. Your consciousness is part of this creation. Whether you are conscious, you're conscious or not. What we want you to do is to become empowered to use that consciousness in a deliberate way. One thing that we have proven time and again, not only in this program, but also in the books, The Arc of Millions of Years, is that the observation effect is a very real physical phenomenon. That means that when you look at something, it changes just by your looking at it. When you consider the past, it changes just by you looking at it. When you consider the many futures that lay before you, you bring back feelings, knowledge, wisdom, and you also bring back experience to the present, which is the past, and thus you have charted a new future course. In other words, you are a participant in the future of the planet. An individual, yes, but as more and more people put their consciousnesses together and focus them on one thing or one group of things, guess what happens? The mean consciousness, that is the average consciousness of the populace of the universe, shifts. It is felt not only on this planet, but on other planets, not only in this time, but in other times. And not only in all times, but all dimensions. You are integrally involved in the universe on multiple levels. So there's a great responsibility there, and guess whose it is? Yours. And it cannot be taken away from you. It does not matter if you are in prison. It does not matter if you are impoverished. It does not matter if you are a student or if you are a teacher. Or if you're just a mom or a dad, you have an effect. Whether you affect the person at the mini mart where you buy your fuel, or whether you decide to buy an electric vehicle and stop digging up the planet, shoveling it into your gas tank and burning it, or whether you choose not to get angry tomorrow, all of those things affect the universe. Everything you do will eventually affect the universe. And what we want you to do is do it on purpose and realize once and for all, you are Source. And with that realization, you might be amazed at how vacant you are of purpose. You also might be amazed at how your purpose, whether it is to create music or lay bricks, whether it is to paint houses or teach five-year-olds, has an amazing effect on the universe. You should do it with everything you have, because the universe needs to move. One program early this year, we came back to you from the year 2015 and told you what the conditions were like. We told you we needed to come back to the year 2007, 2008, 2009 to make changes in the consciousness of the people so that we could chart a new future, a new 2015. Because I promise you, if you continue asleep, you will not like the 2015 that's there. We need a new one. And that's why we came back to give you this information. Some of you, and you know who you are, did not have to come back this time. But you came back to help others, and we're glad you did. It's time you woke up to that purpose. Don't worry about how many toys you accumulate before you die. Don't worry about the value of your 401k. Worry about what you can do for the planet, for the race. We have been at this precipice before. If you don't believe me, take a look at those pyramids for about half an hour and tell me they don't look familiar. Take a look at the complexes built in the Yucatan and tell me they don't look familiar. Go out of the night sky and look at the stars. Lay on your back. Look at those satellites as they go over. Look at the other things that go over. Tell me that doesn't look familiar. You are much, much more than meets the eye. You are much more than the peas and carrots and chocolate milkshakes you consume each day. You are a bright, leaping, flying, singing being. Take advantage of it. Starting tomorrow. When you wake up, you are this new person. Get after it, people, and we'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.